You're listening to Comedy Central.
Welcome to episode 51 of the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
In my younger and more vulnerable years, my father gave me some advice that I've been turning over in my head ever since. Whenever you feel like criticizing anyone, he told me, just remember that you're Anthony goddamn Jeselnik, breaker of worlds. No one can stop you, not even death itself.
Who told you that? Who told you that advice?
That is a ad-libbed quote from, can you guess the author, and for bonus points, the novel?
No.
One of the most famous authors and novels in American history.
I'm not even going to try.
Take a wild guess.
No.
F. Scott Fitzgerald, Great Gatsby.
I guess that would have been the guess.
Yep. Yep. How was
sneaky readable. I've reread that a few times.
It's like
a fun read. People think of that as some like, ooh, that's a tough thing to read. That's just like a party read.
In school, I wasn't into it. I went Cliff Notes on that one, but this was pre-internet days. But then later on, I read it and I loved it. I love Fitzgerald. I just Googled famous literary quotes and then found one that would talk about me getting criticized by anyone for anything, and brought that heat. How was your week, Greg?
It was great.
And the week off. You know, we're back in the studio on Tuesdays. No fire yesterday, which was great. That was nice. We're still dealing with the fallout from the CBS Viacom merger. tensions are high.
Your tension seem a little high tonight.
I'm nervous.
There's nights where you really seem like you need to be. You pop those nicotine pills, right?
A nicotine lozenge?
Yeah, lozenge. It feels like this is like a heavy nicotine lozenge night for
you. No, this is just me. This is just me being a little tired. It's a busy week. The tensions have been high for me. This merger doesn't really affect me at all. It's everyone around me. I'm talking executives and management. I've been having a good time. My week, I just did a bunch of shows at the Comedy Store. You know, hung out. Enjoyed myself. Things are getting better and better. I booked a gig for next year. My first gig. It won't be headlining. I'll be co-headlining, but I'll have an announcement in the coming months about that. But that's how well things are going. That's how good my jokes have been.
Well, you're at Largo fairly soon because Largo, I saw you on the upcoming bill. I was thinking of buying some tickets to a big Liz Phair show there. And who is following up Liz Phair a week or two later?
Oh, that's right. Anthony, yeah, I forgot Liz Phair played Largo. Liz Phair was, she played last night too.
She's doing three or four nights.
Oh, this is at Largo?
Liz Phair.
She was doing it all at Largo?
What? Yeah, every Monday.
You didn't see any of them? You're not going
to
see
them? I haven't yet. Next Monday is the one I'm hoping to go to, yes.
I heard she's playing all the new stuff. It's awesome. that would be cool. Didn't I once get you an autograph?
Really?
You did. It's one of the nights, Anthony, very, sweet. Underneath this gruff exterior, he, for my birthday, was working on an NBC lot or something. I don't remember how it came about, but you knew that Exile in Guyville by Liz Phair was one of, if not my favorite albums, and you somehow got her to sign it because she was like a guest on the Tonight Show and you knew someone that was working there, something to that effect. And I still have it,
Really?
She signed the cover. She says, "Hey, Greg, what's up?"
I remember I was working on American Dreams.
That's what it says,
"What's up?" And
I don't know what it says. It's like, "Hey, Greg, happy birthday, Liz Phair." I think that's what it says.
One of the production assistants on American Dreams, where Greg got me my first job as an accounting clerk, which let me become a comedian, was going to the Tonight Show, knew some pages after you had left the page program. And Liz Phair was supporting Sheryl Crow. Sheryl Crow was actually the musical guest, and she was just like kicking it. And I was like, I don't know if I want to bother or have this person bother or what. And the person went up and said she couldn't have been nicer and was like, I didn't think anyone wanted to talk to me. Everyone's over there like taking pictures of Sheryl Crow. She was thrilled to do it. So
she's
a good
goddamn legend and has a new book out. I mean,
have you read the book?
I haven't yet. I am going to.
I would recommend getting the book on tape. I know books. I'm not a big book on tape guy. But when you get especially a musician or like an actor's memoir, having them read it to you is so much better. Like that's how I listened to Keith Richards' autobiography, Elvis Costello's autobiography, Patti Smith. It's a great way to do that. You feel like they're just talking to you. But yeah, stand up is coming along well. Everything's going well. I had a fun time on Twitter this week. QAnon. came after me, if that's how you say it.
What is QAnon?
It's like I'm not exactly sure. I believe it's what you would define it as, what used to be, and I'm sure we're going to get notes about this. Whenever you say alt-right, people are like, that's not alt-right. And that means you're alt-right if you're complaining about the definition of it. It's like people who try to get people in, like, let's say liberals or people who are critics of the current administration, however light their criticism might be, try to get them in trouble for child molestation, like the James Gunn thing. You know,
you've been
I mean?
A common target.
They try a couple times, but it's so easily swatted away. And this person's tweet was so funny. It was like, did anyone ever notice that Anthony Jeselnik is always writing jokes about children and sex with children and children's genitalia? And they were like, and then he even retweeted an article about Pikachu giving a circumcision. How's that funny? And I'm like, that's funny in a million ways. I retweeted a Clickhole article. And then I wrote back, just quoted her tweet and just wrote, write what you know. And I got shadow blocked by Twitter, which is it's the second time it's happened. Both times have been with like child abuse jokes, even though I didn't say anything about children in my joke. It was her thing. But where I got like 10,000 likes on it. And none of them show up in the, if you hit notifications, it just doesn't show. It's as if you did not tweet at all. And I'm like, what is going on with their algorithm that they decide that these are the tweets that are too far for me? That I don't know if it's a mistake, a glitch, or like a purposeful thing.
You get put on some ban list. Plus they know, you know, you had Octo No Child Porn Over.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's some that concern across the country. Now it's November. What's going on?
That was the first time it happened, was when I tweeted about Octo No Child Porn Over. I got shadow blocked on that tweet too.
How's the hashtag No Notes November going? Our listeners have really been enjoying sending us some examples of the notes that they're getting that they're just ripping up.
It's like what we're doing. Like, here's what how November is going. We are mowing the lawn and the house is on fire. Okay. No one's going to come out and be like, hey, you didn't trim the hedges. Everyone's like trying to put out a house fire while we're just kind of kicking it in the backyard. So we can kind of do almost whatever we want. I'll get into notes in a second, but how was your week since I last saw
you? I mean, it's this part of the part of the season where
the NFL season,
I should say, where in many weeks I realize I have very little outside of my life other than work and the small amount of time, which is, you know, that I spend with my family, and that's about it. Like, I'm not consuming any culture. I maybe go to dinner with my wife, you know, with Emeka on Saturday nights. You know, that was good. And then that's about it.
It's funny. I thought you were going to say that, like, with the NFL season so crazy and work so taking over, you don't get enough time with your family. But you're including time with your family in that work time.
No, I mean, I get a little bit, but I did the numbers. There's only two. It's crazy because we're here one night and then I'm at work or really gone the whole day, you know, a couple other days. I'm only home. And then on Monday nights, you know, I'm kind of working while I'm home. I'm only literally putting them to bed two nights a week. That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad dad stuff going on.
It sounds great to me. I mean, that sounds like you're nailing it. 2 days a week, like during the NFL season, that sounds good. It's not like they, you know, care.
But it's not like I'm a coach, you know? It's like I don't have the...
Are you there when they wake up in the morning?
Yeah, I do have that. I drop them off to school every single day. So that's, you know, on a day like today, that's my... my interaction, the breakfast time, and dropping them off, and then that's it. You know, bye, says daddy. But I get a lot of satisfaction out of work. The Mason Rudolph story, which we're going to talk about in headlines. That's what's called a tease in the business, Anthony.
No, really?
I really do, like when there's a big story like that. I taped a podcast immediately after, which we do on Thursday nights, and I did it with my friend Chris Wessling. And I find that I really do still love, like, when you have those crazy stories and nights in the NFL. And it used to be me writing about it a lot and assigning writing and editing all this stuff, and now it's some, you know, stuff like podcasting. But I love kind of being a part of that still.
That's true.
I still get a lot of joy and like get off on that.
And it is fun to see you get so excited. Like, I haven't seen you this excited since the Robert Kraft Orchids of Asia Day Spa thing. You know what I mean? When you were just like fired up to go in and talk about that at work every day on your multiple podcasts about,
like, what
the
is
NFL.
What is your peak? You do a lot of things with stand up, obviously, but what's like the best part of the entire process? Because is it taping the special? I wouldn't think that would be it.
Like, no, what then is it's the thing that like you get over. The most It's the beginning. Over? It's starting with nothing, a blank page, and having it eventually fill up. And like you think, like you'll be like, oh, I got 15 minutes. And then you realize that some of those jokes aren't quite up to snuff, so you take them out. So for a while, you're stuck at 15. You're adding jokes every week, taking out jokes. And I really enjoy just the kind of like almost the quality check. In that, like, I could do an hour, like, every year if I wanted to, but it would be a bad hour. So I like kind of building up and then knowing enough or being self-aware enough to take away and then keep building. You know what I mean? So I enjoy that process. And once I get to this point, 15, 20 minutes, then things really kind of start to take off. I get momentum. So literally every night
is your favorite part.
Yeah. I've been healthy. I've been drinking. Just I read at night as late as I can stay up, and I go to bed. I wake up early. I go to this. I go to this club I go to and write for a couple hours. Eat some breakfast. I get at least 5 or 6 jokes out of that, and then I go up and try them out at night. And
really, wait, you write it at breakfast?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll like eat breakfast and then sit back and write. I'll hang out for a couple hours. Breakfast takes me 20 minutes to eat, but I've been doing that, and it's been a fun way to go. And you know, once the TV show starts up again, then I won't be able to have that kind of a schedule. So I'm trying to get as much done now as I can before we go.
I heard Ellen DeGeneres talk about her special as a guest on Conan's podcast, and she said she did it in 2 months. Netflix was amazed about that she like put her special together at that quick, that she would almost get bored. And she only did 9 shows before doing the special, that she would get bored of the material. She wanted it to be fresh.
Yeah, it's amazing that you can take 20 years off of stand-up and then come back with an hour where 40 minutes of it is taking a Q&A. Good for you, Ellen. I still can't believe you didn't get that Emmy nomination. We're in the same boat, me and Ellen. How was your week, Erica?
It was good. It was low-key, relaxed. Went to that Christmas bar, my friend's pop-up. That was really fun. It was a success. And, you know, just hung out and did some low-key stuff and stuff around the house, which was really nice.
Sounds like the perfect amount of time for you to talk. And now, let's get into, did we get any notes? Yikes. It's going to be a bad music. It's going to be a bad music podcast, isn't it, Erica? You all right, Greg?
Hopefully that wasn't on mic. You know, we can edit that out.
Scared of it. No, we're not going to. We're scared about notes. Did we get some notes? Not from Comedy Central. I did get a phone call from my manager, an unprecedented phone call, where there was another phone call the next day to talk about the phone call the day before. And that's all I'm going to say about that. The funny thing about this podcast is that I get into trouble for things that any listener, except for maybe like 5 people, would not understand like what the trouble is. It's like Twitter can get me into trouble with the general public, but this podcast gets me into trouble with like lawyers and shit, with like people who are just like, oh, you shouldn't have done this or that. That I'm just like, why am I doing this?
It's gotten you into a lot of trouble, I would say, like with your bosses or with your manager in this case, or.
Mm-hmm. But every time they get mad, and they're always right to be. I'm like, I kind of understand. This is how I behave. I misbehave. That's how I make my living. Why are you so upset? And if you are upset, change your tone. But the people who listen would never be like, oh, I can't believe Anthony just said that. You know what I mean? There's not like an,
I think they would
he
believe
went there.
It. You say a lot of stuff that they're like, I can't believe he says that, especially like about his employers or anything like that.
It's like inside. It's like too inside baseball that only like Comedy Central employees and people who work for me would know that I should not have done. And again, I'm just in the moment. Like, it's not like a middle finger to the network. It's like I'm about to do. It's more of just me talking. And then they'll be like, hey, I can't believe you said that. And I'm like, what did I say? Like, I don't remember this. It's not all written down where I'm like, oh, here's where I blast the network or put people who work for me on notice. It's just me talking. And am I going to misbehave? Of course. That's why you're listening to my dulcet tones. Notes for Comedy Central. This is for Comedy Central, Viacom, CBS, whoever the fuck is running things now. We're in a studio. We come into this podcast studio. I believe there are two other podcasts who use it. And it's
My Two Dads.
It's a disaster. Your Two Dads and Roast Battle Podcast, I believe. And every time we come in here, it looks like they had like a kid's day. It was like bring your daughter to work day and everyone had 8-year-olds. Like the mics are all just thrown around everywhere. The levels are all weird. People complain about the levels. It's not Erica. It's the studio. I wish they would have someone come in and reset everything after each podcast so that when you come in, it's like if you worked in a kitchen, you don't just like leave stuff everywhere and hope the morning crew cleans it up. Like you do your dishes and you clean everything so when the morning crew comes in, everything's ready to go. But thanks for the 2 warm cans of Coke that you leave for me every week. Like I'm fucking Santa Claus. Do you guys have any notes for the network while I'm popping off here?
No, I love Comedy Central, Viacom.
CBS?
You know, CBS.
Greg's an all-access man. He's a CBS all-access guy. Loves that Star
Blue
Trek.
Blue Blood, NCIS.
And then the ads this week.
Bob loves Abishola. I feel like,
hearts,
where is this going to go?
Bob hearts Abishola.
Where is this going to go?
It's going to go away in about 3 weeks.
I thought wouldn't it be funny if it was just like them just getting down like for most of the 22 allotted minutes every week. Like that would be a different show. They have never done that with a network show.
I remember going to see the movie Cold Mountain. Do you remember the movie Cold Mountain?
No. I mean, I remember Nicole Kidman's in it, but I didn't see it.
Nicole Kidman and Jude Law are lovers who are like trying to get back to each other. It's like a wartime. Jude Law escapes and he's like the whole two. It's like a 2.5-hour movie. What's Her Face won an Oscar for it. But at the end, they finally meet up with like 20 minutes left in the movie. Yeah, spoiler alert, he gets killed. But they meet right before that and they have like a love scene. And I was like, they like go in a tent and they make love, like a sweet, like PG-13 love scene. And I was like, this would be so funny if after 2 hours of like Civil War drama, it was just like a hardcore anal, like they're just like screaming. He's like talking her into it. She's like trying to get, like, it would have just been so funny if after all of that, they just went hard. But that was not. That's not the case with Bob Hart, Abishola.
You don't know that.
Maybe the season finale.
Right. Well, what if like you're always looking for a twist in these shows. The Good Place, for instance, you know, has a big twist at the end of the first season.
The Good Place.
I haven't actually watched it, but I just know this. And you get to the end of, you know, the first, let's say 8, 9, 13 episodes. And it's just been a slow build. I don't know why he's
laughing because I loved it and you were making fun of it.
No, ignoring quickly. Erica jumping in to say I love The Good Place and just keep on talking.
Because I know neither one of us has watched it, so where are we going to go with
I have
that?
Many friends who work on the show. I hear great things. I haven't watched the TV show since Succession.
I'm just saying, imagine if it's 13 episodes of buildup of Bob Harding Abishola and finally, you know, she gives it up. And then the next 11 episodes are all just kind of like delving into their sexuality, like in a mature, interesting way. But just like that's the sole focus from then on. No one's going to see that coming. People are going to be talking.
You know what? I'm going to bum you out right now. But since the merger, you know, we get inside information about what's going to go on. You know, I've visited the writer's room of Bob Hart's Abishola. And at the end, she gets killed by police. Like it's a mistaken identity, and it's like Bob's not even in that episode. Like it's just her mistaken identity, and she gets shot multiple times. But leading up to that, it's a sweet sitcom. And that was those were the notes for the staff of Bob Hart's Abishola and the network in general. Not complaining, just letting you know, just clean it up a little bit. Let's make it a little more professional. If there's only 3 podcasts in the studio should be pristine, as opposed to us coming in here and figuring it out every week. And I see the complaints about levels and stuff. When
they're
I listen to the podcast.
They're not that many. I do my hard work
fine.
After the fact but to make everything match.
I'm defending you. When I listen to it, it's totally fine. I don't listen to any other podcasts, so who knows? I do love our podcast. Like I've been making the rounds doing other podcasts lately just to kind of pump this one up. And everyone, not only do they make me go to their house, but they've all got cameras. Like I had to fight to get cameras out of here because it's a podcast. I didn't realize that now because I took a couple years off doing podcasts. Everyone, they don't give you a heads up. You just show up and they're on like full makeup and you like just roll out of bed and you're like, oh, okay. I guess I'm in an extreme close up for an hour and a half on YouTube. That's why I like our show. It's fun to be on someone else's show and be like, yeah, I've got a podcast too. And then like, I'll be on it and be like, no, you won't. We don't have guests because I would never make my friends do what you're making me do.
What if the network said, we got to juice up season 3. We want you guys to have some guests.
I mean, you saw the email in season 1 when they asked us to have That's guests. True. My exact response was a big F you. I think literally just 2 words. I don't think I even put in a period. It was just like, fuck you. But if they were like, we want cameras back, I'd be like, put the whole podcast on camera. Put the entire thing. Don't pick and choose the bits you think aren't going to get us in trouble. That was the lamest part. Mm-hmm. I was like, you guys are taking the least funny part of the podcast and putting it online. So let's get rid of it.
Well, maybe it worked. All this promotion you're doing, because episode 50 of the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
You know, doing bonkers, you know, numbers, I think is going to be our most popular episode yet.
I think people just get excited about number 50. You know, it's like a comic book, you know. Issue 50 is going to be big. Issue 75, something's going to happen. Issue 100, someone's going to die. There's going to be a new beginning.
It's like issue 51. You could skip it, but you're going to miss out on Bob Hart's Abishola.
Issue 51, you're excited because 50 set up some stuff. You're like, I got to see how this all plays out. I got to see what happens with the merger. Everyone on listens to the podcast is all excited about the merger. You know what they're even more excited about? Erica, now it's time for
ad copy.
Let's get into some Indochino custom menswear. Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe, and you want a custom wardrobe. You don't want to just be going off the rack. Indochino's the largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Suits, shirts, coats, and more. Everything is made to your exact measurements for a great fit. You get to personalize all the details, including your lapel, lining, and your own monogram. Get into that. They have hundreds of suit options for all occasions, work, formal events, even your own wedding. Even your own wedding. They'll get you a top hat. They'll find one. The best part is they are affordable. Almost all their custom clothing is under $400 US. Not available in Canada. The process is simple. Choose your fabric, pick your customization, submit your measurements. Your package will be delivered straight to your door in 2 weeks. You can get measured and design your suit at your nearest Indochino showroom or do it all yourself at Indochino.com. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Vanity at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, Indochino.com. Promo code Vanity for $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more. An incredible deal for made-to-measure clothing. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit. And that was
ad copy.
Thank you, Erica. Thank you. And now that Erica's shown us that she can tell when ad copy's coming, let's take it down to Erica's Corner. Erica Tamposi is our producer. We love her. She's doing a whole bunch of stuff at the NFL Network, getting on camera more and more, getting herself out there. You know, she's not just a behind-the-scenes person anymore. She's a scenes person now, opening up bars and stuff. And we like to give her a little time out of the show to do whatever she wants. You know, ask a viewer email, you know, ask us a question, even just talk about herself if she wants to. So, or play a game. Erica, what do we have for this week?
Yeah, well, we got a lot of emails about bathroom etiquette last week after what we talked about in the week before. They've been like really kind of piling in.
I was surprised at that. I thought people were going to be like annoyed that we're talking about bathroom etiquette.
Yeah.
But Twitter was like all the comments were about like, here's what I do and here's what happens when this happens. And like, I was just like, no.
Many, and I had like 50-year-old men emailing me being like, well, you know, if you wash first, it's probably cleaner than whatever. But if you want to send a better email than that, it's jrvpjuniorvicepresident@gmail.com. But today, we talked about it last week when you introduced the segment. You were like, oh, you know, sometimes Erica will do a friendship challenge, and we haven't done a friendship tag this season. And so, you know, we've spent more time together, but, you know, you guys have been busy. So I wanted to ask you guys a couple questions about each other, and you're going to answer it how the other one would.
So it's like what we did on the live show that we taped at a Clusterfest.
It's like the Newlywed Game.
Exactly, but for best friends.
Okay.
All right, Greg. What car would Anthony never, ever drive? And you have it in your head? So, Anthony, think about it.
Couldn't there be a million answers to this?
No, there's one.
Like a Ferrari.
He would never, ever drive a Ferrari? He like would refuse to get in one?
Just something, over the top ostentatious and like, you know, trying to make up for... you know, it's like, hey, look at me. I'm Mr. Big Cock or whatever.
You're not, I mean, that is what I say when I enter the room. you're kind of not wrong in that, like, when I once rear-ended someone, I'd take my car in, and they gave me, they were like, you can have a, you can, like, wait for, like, you can wait 4 hours and get, like, your same car, similar car, or you can take this Porsche Carrera. And I was just, you can take it right now. Right. And I was just like, oh, okay. And for a week, I had to drive this Porsche, and I hated it. I hated it so much.
He doesn't want that super flash. But, maybe like an SUV would be an answer.
But SUVs, I don't like being that high up. I feel like I'm like going to run over cars. But the answer is a Prius. I would never drive a Prius. Like I my friends have Priuses, and I like them. But it's like in LA especially, it's a girl's car. Like you get inside, it looks like a rocket ship. You're like, oh, this is so cool. It's for girls. Not women. It's for girls.
Chad Ochocinco, you know, used to drive around in a Prius, the former you know, Bengals wide receiver.
It might just be an LA thing that like so many people in LA have them.
Well,
it's
also
like, no.
It's also past. That's what I don't like, cars that are just super trendy and that is so obviously going to pass. The Prius, I'm sure it's still popular.
It's everywhere.
But it's sort of passed. There was a moment where everyone was driving a Prius, and then, especially where I live in Santa Monica, then there was a moment where everyone was driving the super ugly, boxy BMW, like, energy-efficient car, which totally defeated the purpose of, like, owning a BMW. Like, yeah, you finally just bought a BMW, and it's the ugliest thing ever because, you know, it doesn't use gas. And now everyone just drives a Tesla, which also is kind of trendy and ugly.
Prius is more.
I don't trust Tesla. I don't believe it's going to be a company in 3 years that I'm like, why would you buy it? And then they're like, oh, customer service, we went home forever.
Any car where like anyone who buys it then tries to proselytize about the car is not a car I want.
Yeah. I'm glad that Greg completely forgot what the game was and kind of even forgot what the question was and just started going off about cars.
Okay, Anthony, what would Greg say annoys him the most about you? So what do you do that annoys Greg the most? So Greg, think of that, your answer, and then Anthony, you answer.
This is going to be tough. Like normally I would say most of my friends get annoyed with me for forgetting things, but you forget things like nobody's business.
Yeah, I find that comforting.
So that can't be it.
That was kind of what I immediately thought, though, was like, but it's hard for me. I don't get annoyed very easily.
You seem amused by all of my vices and foibles and career suicide attempts. That is a tough one for me. What annoys you the most? I don't think, like, even when I throw money around, like, I think you enjoyed that. Like, I don't know if there's anything that I do that could annoy you. Like, you are, it's like, what annoys you about this gravy train you're on? Nothing. You know what I mean? What's the worst part?
Like, throw money around. What would I get annoyed about there? What did you, I didn't understand.
Some people are just like, if I'm like, I got dinner. You know, some people are just like, oh, like Mr. Big Shot. You know what I mean? But you're like, thank you for dinner. You know what I mean? It's like, I would never get annoyed at someone like that, but it's a thing that people would get annoyed about.
It's like, I got you when we go to Tender Greens. You know what I mean? That's sort of how I
that
like,
one time.
Pretend in my mind.
That one time. I don't think there's anything I do that annoys Greg.
I actually think that's true. The people that are closest in my life, you know, maybe I keep most people at a distance, but the people that are in, I'm not trying to like pat myself on the back, but I think I accept them how they are and you just roll with it.
Yeah. Also, I'm a golden faucet. I'm like I'm the goose that lays the golden eggs. Like I might make some noises, but you're not going to be like, oh, this damn goose.
I would say, yeah.
I wish you would shut up and stop leaving golden eggs for my family.
It's not so much forgetting things, but more just like forgetting that. Yes, we just had that conversation like 2 days ago. You'll do that sometimes. I don't know if that's annoying. It's kind of funny.
Sometimes.
Just like yeah, you just. It's like earlier on in this podcast, you told. You know, the story about how every podcast you go on now, you know, there's a video component in this and that. And you said that same story last week on the podcast.
Yeah, very likely. Very likely. I did the podcast 2 weeks ago. I mean, in my defense, we were talking about the cameras in here.
Yes. Yeah.
So it did play back into it. But you have also, I've seen you amazed, like jaw on the floor, that I've remembered something from college that you would never have remembered in a million years. So fuck you, Greg.
Greg, what's Anthony's favorite band?
I feel like I should know this. Favorite band? Does Elvis Costello count?
That wasn't what you were thinking, was it?
No. I mean, it's up there. You're going to kick yourself.
Stripes?
Yep.
Whoa, okay. Came back around.
That was actually my first thought.
I was once interviewing Jim Jefferies for something. Like, it was like, Jim's got a special coming out. Comedian's going to interview you. It's Anthony. And we're talking on the phone, and he's like, talking about music. He's like, do you have a favorite band? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, who is it? And I go, the White Stripes. And there was just this period, long period of silence. And he goes, and I'm like, how about you? He goes, like, the Beatles. Like, he was like disgusted with me that it wasn't the Beatles, that like that it would be a modern band, not something I grew up with. But I stan for the White Stripes. I love them and saw them more times in concert than I've ever seen anybody else.
Really?
I would have also accepted Run the Jewels.
Right. I was trying to think of something more. I just thought maybe the White Stripes had been replaced in the years since, and I was trying to think of someone.
Band makes me think rock, which makes me think White Stripes.
I never saw the White Stripes.
Hmm.
R.I.P.
Really?
Anthony, if Greg had to hang out with one of his exes for an entire day, who would he choose?
I can only think of two of them. I know you're not in touch with either of them.
Well, he doesn't have to be in touch. Like, if he just could go back and it could be just platonic, but he
would
have
to
hang out with
one. I would say only because it was like a short affair kind of thing. Like, back in the day, I would say Colleen Wolf from the NFL Network.
Well, Gonzo, her husband wasn't supposed to.
No, I'd guess Ruth for a day. I know you're not in touch with her anymore, but you guys were close. And I think you could spend a day together and catch up, and it would be nice. It's not going to be fucking Darcy.
Of those two options, I probably would go Darcy, just because there's like, you know, he would just like hang out or whatever. You wouldn't, you know, just be easygoing. I would choose. This is a stupid question in general, but I would choose, you know, my girlfriend from high school, though, that you don't even know.
I never met her. No.
So there you go. Jamie.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Before my time.
I'm sure Emiko will really enjoy this.
Before my time. It's for one day if you had to. You're not in touch with them. Not like Colleen, that you see every day, that you travel with, that you brought to San Francisco without her husband.
Yeah. Greg, yeah. You both are out to ice cream. What flavor does Anthony pick?
I mean, that's stupid. I mean, I'm not gonna. I mean, I'll take a guess, but I've never seen him order ice cream in my life, I don't think. Although we did go to Eaton Park in Pittsburgh once, so maybe we get a sundae there. I don't know. Rocky Road.
Not bad. If I went to a Baskin Robbins, I would get the three scoops in a cup, Rocky Road.
Damn, mint, that was pretty good.
Mint chocolate chip and strawberry.
I used to mix mint. I worked at an ice cream shop for 7 years when I started at 13. During the summers, I was managing by 15, humble brag. It's my corner, I can say that. And I used to mix mint chocolate chip and then another scoop of strawberry on the top. Surprisingly, when you eat them separately, but when they come together, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Is that why you got those thick-ass forearms from scooping that ice cream?
Yeah, exactly.
I just hear, like, people who work in ice cream shops, their forearms get jacked.
My whole right arm was completely lopsided.
That always seemed like the worst summer job.
Oh, I loved
for instance
it.
Like we worked at a restaurant on Martha's Vineyard for a summer, Anthony, and there are so many different ways to make money, and a lot of them you can make a lot of money there. And then there were the college kids who were scooping ice cream for close to minimum wage, and it just seemed like that's the worst. What could be worse than that? Plus it's freezing.
I couldn't imagine.
It was fun.
Chocolate peanut butter, though, I mean, come on,
that's a good one.
Greg most proud of in his career?
I would have to say making the jump from managerial, editorial to talent. I think that's like the, you know, there's a lot of work that went into getting to that point, but I think making that leap was the biggest, like, from plateau to, you know, plateau that most people don't get to do. It's like you talk about us working at Martha's Vineyard. I was in the kitchen. You were waiting tables. You made a lot more money than me. That if I wanted to work, if I was like, hey, you're making too much money, I want to wait tables too, they would have said, no, you're in the kitchen. You know what I mean? So you actually got from the kitchen to the front of the house, and that is a huge accomplishment, that I would say that. Am I right?
Yeah, I couldn't think of a good answer, but that's a great answer.
Definitely.
I like that. Getting out, going from fantasy to reality, as it were, probably was for a while.
Fantasy because, football like,
I
to thought, real football.
Yeah, I used to cover fantasy football. That's how I started. And I was trying to think of like people who covered fantasy football and kind of made the transition and then were talking just analysis and there weren't really any. And so, but yeah, I think your answer is better.
It is.
So then how would Greg cook his steak or like order his steak since you were in the kitchen if you were?
I mean, this was a seafood. This was the seafood shanty, so not a lot of steaks.
Still open.
Different owner. Owner's
but you
dead.
You go out to steak with Greg all the time.
Yeah, I'd say. I think he does what I do, which is medium rare plus.
I mean, yeah, medium rare. I don't know about the plus. Most grown-ups at this point order medium rare, don't they?
I think so. Who is Anthony's favorite comedian?
He's looking at me.
And you're looking at
I'm
him
thinking,
for, like,
I'm looking at you,
telepathic.
But I'm also thinking. I'm also like,
yeah.
Who would I choose?
I don't know. You always give Brian Regan a lot of credit.
I think Brian Regan's hilarious, but I've never once been like, he's my favorite comedian.
I mean, yeah, I've never heard you say anyone's your favorite.
Once I say the name, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. You'll be like, oh, yeah, why didn't I say that first?
Okay, just say Colin Quinn? No.
He's an older one.
Mm-hmm. I tell one-liners. I'm on stage telling short.
Well, why do I have to guess?
Because we've been best friends for 20 years, and that's the whole game. Stephen Wright.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
If I had to name one.
Well, he's, you know, dead, right?
No.
Shit.
Very much alive.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. It's okay.
I mean, is he coming out with, like, new material and stuff?
He had a special maybe, like, 10 years ago on Comedy Central. But he still tours. He still works. He's great. Stephen Wright.
This really took a tough turn for me. But, yes, that was the obvious answer. This
It's hard when
you're on the... It's like Jeopardy. It's like you can answer those questions at home.
That shouldn't have been hard
at all.
It's
not as easy when you're under the spotlight.
Anthony, who is Greg's favorite athlete?
This is tough because if you go all the way back, if we're thinking like beginning of friendship, like poster on your bedroom wall, Ellis Burks.
That would have been my
right. And you named your daughter.
That would have been my answer. Yeah, because I named my daughter after her, so it's hard to replace. That.
Like if you said Tom Brady now, I'd be like, I understand it's evolved, but no, Ellis Burks is the first thing that popped into my head.
Yeah, you got it.
I crushed this game, don't
yeah,
I? I mean,
did.
We played it three times. And
you win every time.
I got white
it's
stripes.
As if eventually.
Barely.
Eventually, and you guessed Elvis Costello first. I think the closest you got was Rocky Road. And that was Erica's Corner. Shine on, you crazy diamond. Good work on that, Erica. Before we get into headlines, I just want to say thank you for taking the time to put together that corner. Sometimes you put a lot of work in, sometimes you just read an email, but that was like, Erica had to do some work. I see your pad.
I wrote them all myself.
I see you wrote these all down, so thank you. I appreciate the effort. And now, Greg, let's get to headlines. Let's talk about.
Let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, you say you don't listen to notes, but your boss, wanted some football news. Second straight week, we got some football news.
I said we're not going to force football news, but this was insane. Okay, so I'm watching the game at home.
Last Thursday night,
Steelers-Browns. It's a big one for us. AFC North is always a tough battle, but if we win this game, I'm like, okay, we can make the playoffs. If we lose it, I'm like, we're done. I get to the Comedy Store, and the Browns go up 21-7. Like, just as they score, and I'm like, okay, there's 4 minutes left, this game's over, I've got to go on stage. And I figure, like, I'm going to come back in, and everyone's just going to be, like, chilling. I come in, and it's, like, World War III. And we're just watching this replay over and over again. Greg, explain it from a football point of view.
Well, Mason Rudolph, the Steelers quarterback, was tackled after throwing the ball with about 7 or 8 seconds left in a game that was a blowout. It was over at that point. Miles Garrett, the Browns defensive end, threw him to the ground. That play should have been penalized. That was kind of the part that I think got lost in the shuffle. But he throws the quarterback to the ground. It was kind of a dirty hit. Rudolph fights back a little by pushing on Garrett's helmet. And Garrett loses his mind, takes off his helmet, and swings and hits Rudolph, the quarterback, who at this point doesn't have a, you know, of course he doesn't have the helmet on because Garrett's holding it, and hits him in the head with a helmet. That's never happened in NFL history.
It's never happened in high school. It's never happened any time ever that a player's been hit in the head with their own helmet.
It sets off a melee where, you know, Marquise Pouncey, the Steelers center, just gets after Garrett, starts kicking him in the stomach and in the face, and someone takes a cheap shot at Rudolph. Again, it just goes wild. The NFL quickly suspends Garrett, the Browns player who swung the helmet, for the rest of the season. And, you know, my thought just watching it was ultimately a good outcome, relatively, because in most of the time in that scenario, he would have been lying on the floor,
yes,
on the ground,
bleeding,
with his brains falling out, and that would have been a lot worse.
This is a game where so many players got hurt. I saw a Steelers wide receiver being walked off the field with blood pouring out of his ear.
Oh, no, maybe not.
It reminded me of that that Steelers-Ravens game a couple years ago where Shazier got paralyzed. People were just getting hurt all over the place. Unnecessary hits, and that's just the AFC North. And it's you know, it's two rivals. And I love Cleveland. I love the city of Cleveland. I understand the team's frustration. I don't think, and people are like trying to blame Rudolph for this. I think that with like 5 seconds left in the game, a dirty hit like that, like, you are going to take it a little harder than you would have if it was like halftime, or if it's if the game's a little closer. Like, there was no reason for that. And then I think that Marquise Pouncey punching and kicking Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
Myles Garrett on the ground. If you just saw that, if you didn't see him swing the helmet and just saw Pouncey, you'd be like, Pouncey's got to be gone for the year.
Well, he was suspended three games.
Yeah, the guy who, that's, honestly, I think they just don't want him to have to play the Browns again in 3 weeks or 2 weeks. And the guy who runs up behind Rudolph and shoves him, I can't believe he only got one game. After
Why?
He gets
that
hit in the head.
Like, I actually was surprised that he got suspended because it was comical. It was so over at that point, and he just comes over and he's just like, eh, what the hell? I'm just going to push him over like a little bit.
After he gets hit in the head, you run up behind him and shove him to the ground. And here is the craziest thing to me. The craziest thing to me that I can't believe people aren't talking about this way more is that both Myles Garrett and Marquise Pouncey apologized. They're like, that shouldn't have happened.
Quickly.
Yeah, right after the game, they're like, they're calm. They're like, that shouldn't have happened. That's not me. But they both have the exact same excuse. I blacked out. I blacked out and just started wailing on a dude in a completely illegal way. These guys are 300 pounds. You're not allowed to black out if you're not drinking. If you're in the middle of a football game, if you're just like, if you're friends with someone who's that big and they just start kicking the hell out of you and you're like, what happened, man? They're like, oh, I blacked out.
Like, I was hope surprised I don't get in trouble you wanted to talk about this because I didn't know what was funny about it.
I think it's so funny that both those guys were just like, yeah, I just completely blacked out and just started. And when I black out, I just start wailing on dudes. I just like to rip off someone's helmet, hit him in the head. And it's not like it's Roethlisberger. It's not like this has been a rivalry where things are building up.
Well, that has nothing to do with it.
No, it totally is, because Roethlisberger has played the Browns a million times. That if it's like, we've got personal beef with him, we're not going to take that kind of stuff. No one's mad at Mason Rudolph. You know what I mean?
It's kind of a doofish.
It's not like they're going to run after the onion
headline, which was like the NFL rescinds, you know, all suspensions, or decides no suspensions for all Browns players after reviewing film that revealed Rudolph had a punchable face.
Yes, you butchered the headline, but I did see it. yes, but it's just insane to do to a backup. Like, there's no way it was personal. And someone
that's
tried
a weird
to tell
take
me,
to have. It's just that it was
no,
just
I get
at
what
the
you're
moment
saying.
In blacking out. It raises a question, though. I think a lot of NFL football is played in a state that's fairly close to what we would call being blacked out.
Sure. But when do you ever see
put
this?
Yourself in an insane state of mind?
They
so
might say, I didn't remember the play, or I lost track of the snap count, and we were offsides, but not, oh, I almost beat a player to death with his own equipment? Oh, yeah, sorry, I blacked out. That never happens. It's unprecedented. And someone tried to tell me today that Mason Rudolph called Myles Garrett the N-word, and that's what set him off.
No,
and I don't believe
no,
it for a second.
Everyone would
there's
know
no
that.
Way, there's no way you would call one guy the N-word with two other black guys on your team around you. You just would not do it. It's not like Marquise Pouncey's like, I'm cool if Rudolph does it.
Plus, Garrett would have said something immediately, and he would have explained it. He said there was ultimately no explanation. Maybe Rudolph was grabbing for the helmet, or he, mistakenly kind of kicked him in the groin or something. It was unclear why he did it. I did like that the NFL immediately, you know, and quietly moved their game from like the nationally televised game next week to 1 p.m., you know, with the CBS like C team, because they don't want anyone to watch the rematch.
No. And I mean, it's not what rematch? Like, every single player on the Steelers is hurt. It's hurt or suspended. It's going to be the worst game of all time.
The helmets are heavy. Like, they are heavy.
Yeah, they're meant to protect your head.
Yeah.
You should not be swinging it upside down.
But it's not
down
like a bike
head.
Helmet. I mean, right.
You see his head go down. It looks like his spine shrinks 3 inches and comes back up.
Well, he hit him on kind of the soft bottom part of it, or else, yeah.
Well, a lot of people are like, a helmet, it's like not that heavy. It's like those NFL helmets could knock you out.
Of course, they could kill you.
And listen, this is a guy who got knocked out like 4 weeks ago by a regular hit, just took it to the chin. You can't be swinging at that guy. He was in concussion protocol 2 weeks ago.
What do you think about the fact that Maurkice Pouncey was such good friends with Aaron Hernandez in college and afterwards stood by him, that when someone did a profile on Pouncey while he was still with the Dolphins, he had a framed picture of Aaron Hernandez up in his house in Florida?
I'll do you one better. The Pouncey brothers, when Hernandez got arrested, had like free Aaron t-shirts, like wearing them in a photo, and like posted it to their own Instagram. Like, they must be out of their goddamn minds. I love Pouncey, but that is truly insane behavior. But yeah, if your quarterback gets taken out like that and gets hit in the helmet, like, you do. I don't think he, like, I understand the 3-game suspension, but I'm in no way upset with anyone on the Steelers team for that. Let me ask you this, Greg. Do you blame the Cleveland coach, Freddie Kitchens? He took some heat for that. People were saying you either coach it or you allowed it to happen. Either way, it's your fault. I don't think Tomlin had anything to do with this.
A little bit, because the headshots that the Browns were taking earlier in the game and the general total like lawlessness and lack of discipline on their team kind of starts at the top. So I give him a little bit. But ultimately, you know, it's just Garrett losing his mind.
AFC North football is so annoying because the Steelers for many years have been the best team in the AFC North, but they have to play these six games a year against teams that are either average or below average, who just beat the living hell out of us because that's like all they can do. It's brutal. Facing the Bengals, it's like, yeah, we should win that game, but how many players are going to get hurt? Because the Bengals are looking forward to this all year. The Browns all year, the Ravens all year. That it was tough to watch, but fascinating at the same time, because you could take any one of those. If it was just Mason Rudolph getting shoved from behind, not wearing a helmet at the end of the game, that would be, people would be talking about that all week. If you just showed Pouncey laying into Myles Garrett, that would be talking all week. But when you take off someone's helmet and hit them on the head with it, not your own helmet,
well,
but their helmet.
The annoying thing is that now I feel like every sports topic, political topic, any topic needs to have a both sides. And like, there was a lot of both sides with this, where it was a lot of people like, well, Rudolph grabbed his helmet. It's like, what is going on? There's so many. It shouldn't be that way. But a lot, the initial reaction on NFL Network from the ex-players were actually very critical of Rudolph, saying like, no, let's not just put it all on Garrett. Yeah, let's put it all on Garrett. No one's ever swung a helmet at another person's head. Let's put it all on him.
I mean, you're at the NFL Network. I'm just watching on TV. But I thought that everyone from Baker Mayfield after the game on down was like, you just can't have that. You can't be ripping off a player's helmet. Like, you know when like wide receivers and cornerbacks get in that like slap fight where they're slapping the sides of each other's helmets with their open hand, and you're like, what are you guys doing? This was like him trying to get revenge for all of that. I thought he was pretty universally condemned. I think he's gone not just for this year, and I don't think they make the playoffs now without him, but I think he's gone for at least 4 games next year.
I love it when Anthony gets fired up about sports and hot takes. You wanted NFL news? You got it.
It's the violence. And now it's time for
ad copy.
Support for the Jesselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project, JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Comes from Manscaped, the number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for down there. I'm not even going to say what they rhyme it, and I'm not going to rhyme it. Listen, everyone has to trim. If you don't trim, you should be trimming. I'm talking about armpits. I'm talking about sideburns. I'm talking about your nether regions. This is for the latterist.
I should be trimming my armpits?
No, not you. I'm talking about girls.
Oh, okay.
But people, like, you should be trimming. And even, like, you give a little once over to the armpit sometimes. It gets a little long. You know what I'm saying?
You should. You really should.
You don't want to shave the armpits, but you might give them a little trim. That's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer will not cut you. You don't have to worry about this one. It's not just one of those things you get off the shelf. You're like, I hope I keep this far enough away to trim but not hurt myself. You are bulletproof when you use this. You can take a bullet if you're using the Lawnmower 2.0. You don't just use the same trimmer on your face as you do on the rest of your body. It's nasty. Manscaped also has a crop preserver, anti-chafing deodorant, and moisturizer. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code VANITY at manscaped.com. Always use the right tool for the right job, and the right job is shaving your balls. Your balls will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping when you use the code VANITY at manscaped.com at checkout. That's 20% off free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code VANITY at checkout. And I feel like we must be killing it over at Manscaped because they keep on coming to us for ad reads. I bet like if you go to Japan and they have Manscaped like billboards, that we're on the billboard, like shaving each other.
Like ahead of the Olympics?
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, they're ramping it up. Tokyo, summer 2020, Jeselnik Rosenthal, Manscaped ball shaving ads.
Mm-hmm.
And you said each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's animated, but like it's like we're, it. Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing, I love it.
We're best friends.
I know.
And with the Manscaped 2.0, you can't cut each other. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm Miles Garrett swinging a helmet. I'm swinging the Lawnmower 2.0. You know what I mean? No one's getting suspended. Everyone's going to the playoffs. Gold medals. Japan 2020. And that was...
And copy.
All right. Our next story, Anthony, you're going to help me a little bit with it, but I'll spell out the broad outlines. An owner of a comedy spot.
Theater. Black Box Theater.
Basically, near Boston, shut down her comedy night recently because of an objectionable bunch of sets, but basically a set by a guy where she did not appreciate the jokes that were going on. She heard some of these jokes, which were in her mind derogatory towards women. She sounded a horn in her own venue, walked up to the front.
She's behind the soundboard. She hits a button that's like a big, like either a bell or like something really loud.
She goes up to the front and she says, "This is not who we are." And the four people who actually paid to get in tonight can get a refund. We're shutting down.
Yeah, there were 20 people, like a little under 20 people in the theater. Most of them were friends of the performers. I don't know how many performers there were. She wasn't punishing them. She wasn't like punishing one guy. It was like a bunch of guys in a row. I assume they were all white guys. I have no idea. She said it was misogynistic. I don't know if she said anything was racist. I think it was just misogynistic.
She said, these old and tired, you know, no woman in the world would have wanted to stand in that room last night. Woman comedian.
You're in like a tiny black box theater. It's not like you're at some like amazing show. These guys are like trying to work out, get better. And she stops the show. My favorite part is that, two favorite parts were that when she goes up on stage and says the show's over, you can have your money back, somebody goes, "Is this part of the bit?" Like they didn't. They were like, "Oh, this is unprecedented for someone to do this." So you think you would just wait it out and then be like, "You guys, you can't do the show next month." It was like a monthly stand-up show. I think they normally do improv and different stuff. It's a little black box theater. I've performed in them before. It's not a big deal. There's no stakes whatsoever for the four paying customers. The best part, though, is that this is her press release. She went out. It wasn't like one of the comics was like, "They're trying to stifle my free speech. Let's talk about this." She went out and was like, "If you come to whatever the hell her club is called, you're not going to hear
the Rossi Square Theater.
The Rossi Square Theater. You're not going to hear bad comedy." And everyone was just like, "What? You did what?" Like, no one shuts off someone's mic. Afterwards, you can take them aside and be like, "No." But to stop the show is the most self-serving, like, look at me thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And what did you expect when you booked stand-up comedy? Like, when I first started, I would go to a lot of coffee shops open mics, and a lot of like restaurant open mics, a lot of bars.
Is that scary? Side note, I mean, because it's so small almost.
It's not it's like ideal. I mean, you know it's going to be bad, but you know it's going to be bad, so you're prepared for it. Everyone's just like, okay, let's hope this isn't too terrible. Let's hope they don't have to turn off the game and have the entire audience get mad at us before we start. But it's never good. But for someone to come out and say in the middle of a show, this is not, we're better than this. No, you're not. You own a small theater outside of Boston. This is what you get. This is what happens at theaters like that. I just think it's completely misguided and punishes one comic for a string of comedians. Like, you can't just be like, I was once
well,
at the
apparently
comedy
apparently there
store.
Was an MC who started the night by making a joke that the audience was segregated because, you know, there was only two black guys there. With a bunch of
sure, the MC is the worst person on the show. You know what I mean? You can take the audience member side and be like, "Hey, don't do that." But to stop the show and say like, as if she wanted applause, people are going to be like, "Thank you for stopping this." Like, they bought tickets to the show that you're stopping.
She also said then she shut down. She went across the street, you know, to the to a bar where everyone had kind of gone across the street, and you know, some of the paying customers were there, but the comedians never acknowledged her.
Yeah, why would they? Why? I mean, it's unprecedented for someone to do that. That they're just like, we're never going to perform here ever again. I don't know if maybe it was misogynistic and terrible, but still, like, that's part of seeing comedy. Think about the comedy you had to watch when I was starting out, and you would come to shows. How bad some of, and it wasn't always offensive, but you had to sit through some bad comedy.
I did.
Someone to walk, like, someone could have walked up on stage at any of those clubs and been like, "Sorry, you guys have to sit through this. I'm sorry that this person who brought 10 audience members to watch them do their first 5 minutes had to ruin your night." But I just think it's so funny that she thinks this is, or this woman who owns this theater thinks this is going to be good for her.
It was a big step when you didn't need me to come anymore, you know?
I hated people coming to those shows because I just hated you having to watch all the bad people.
Like, I moved out of LA just to avoid those.
I remember you said, like, in the beginning, like, there was an old man at one of my first shows, like a really old man who was doing it so he could, like, go back to his, like, old folks' home and do a show for the old people. And it was, like, terrible. And you were like, I just like seeing an old man be happy and try stand-up. And, like, 2 weeks later, you were like, if I see another bad stand-up comedian, I'm going to shoot everyone in the face. Like, bad comedy is only so tolerable that, I can see this woman's point, but she handled it in the worst way possible. Greg, that story got me heated. Let's end with a feel-good headline.
Oh, yeah. I love this story. A Massachusetts father from Holyoke, Western Mass, near where I grew up in Wilbraham, is in jail because his 5-year-old kid brought a bag of cocaine to his kindergarten class and told his teacher that he often puts the powder in his mouth and it makes him feel like Spider-Man.
Now,
so the teacher hears this, and then takes the bag. It was stamped with images of Spider-Man, and immediately calls the police, who go to this man's house. He was asleep, and they found a ton of bags of heroin and cocaine in his house.
So now, when I read the story, I read that the bag was sealed, that the kid like wasn't doing it.
No,
like, do you think the kid tried it, like put it in his mouth and felt like Spider-Man, or his dad was like, "That's why it has Spider-Man on
well,
it"? Because
he didn't
it
that
like
day. He just said, the boy said in general, when he puts the powder in his mouth, it makes him feel like Spider-Man. It's like, yeah, no shit. I mean, woo.
I mean, Spider-Man.
You're 5 years old and you have some cocaine, like, forget about it. Well, Iron Man.
Of all the superheroes, Spider-Man talks the most. So I get that. I don't understand why the father had the bag, why you would put, like, hope my kid doesn't get into this. Let me put Spider-Man all over it. Like, that's the last thing you should do. You should put, like, the poster of Parasite on that. You know what I mean? Like, something that, like, no kid would ever want to open up. Ever, but Spider-Man is like, who would be the superhero you would put on a bag of cocaine to make sure your kids didn't take it to school and think it was like a fun thing to do?
Ant-Man, maybe. They hate insects.
They hate insects.
Yeah.
Really? Half Japanese kids hate insects. I know the Japanese love insects. They have vending machines where they get
about?
Like they love them.
This
they
is
love
the
them.
Worst thing
people
I've
in
ever
America
heard.
Are grossed out. People in Japan love them. They keep them as pets. They like to have caterpillars crawling on their hands.
This
they
is bullshit.
They made a movie about it. They made a movie about it called Yuck with an exclamation point about different cultures, like, and how they.
Well, it's a
broad
brusher painting. I think still the majority are freaked out by insects. And yeah, no, my kids, just because they were born half Japanese, aren't like super big fans of the spiders and crickets crawling around.
I'm
know,
just
the
surprised
corners,
they hate
corners
them.
Of our house.
I'm just surprised they hate them so much that like
I also
that
can't
your
think
wife's
of any superheroes.
That your wife's Japanese gene wouldn't overtake your complete and total pussy gene.
No, I mean, if anything, my ability to kill bugs is like the only masculine thing I have going for me in my house. They're all just a bunch of wimps. And then like, they just call screaming, and then I got to come and kill some rodents or kill some bugs.
Well, if I mean, I think Spider-Man on a bag of cocaine makes sense.
Is
that
a strain? Like, is
the,
I don't
know. I think it's just, I think he just marked it to keep it separate from the heroin.
Wait, but you're saying that you would want to keep it away from your kids, but it sounds like the guy was letting his kid taste it. Why else would he say that? Unless that was just something his dad said to the kid that, like, oh, this helps people. Like, it says, you know, Spider-Man.
I guarantee
because, like, that's what it makes people feel like.
Maybe the kid got into
any.
It accidentally, and he was like, oh, you feel like Spider-Man because this is, like, what Spider-Man uses. Never touch it again. Because, like, every Halloween, they're like, watch out for these gummies. People are going to give away these gummies. And they're like, no one is giving away drugs. Like, no one wants to give away cocaine ever. That guy sold cocaine for a living. He wasn't giving it to his kid for free. If the kid was like, I used my allowance money and got this stuff that makes it feel like Spider-Man, I'd be like, okay. There's no way this dad wanted his kid to touch that stuff. You don't get high on your own dad's supply. That's something my dad taught me very early on. I just wonder if Spider-Man, if cocaine had Spider-Man on it, what did the bag of heroin have on it? Like, what superhero would be on that? Was it like, is it Batman? Like, is it, who would be a superhero on heroin?
Just like Ewan McGregor from Trainspotting? I guess that's a literal way to
I mean, it's not
it.
A real sticker.
Is there like a sleep, like a sleeper, like someone that sleeps for...
Like a superhero whose powers they sleep?
Yeah.
No, there is not.
Who can really...
Okay, and that would be the worst superhero.
Esmeralda. Or
who could really like, you know, connect with other people emotionally, you know, like get deep into their feelings.
Heroin just puts you out, doesn't it?
I mean,
aren't everybody that you see that's like
if you
on the
overdose,
street doing heroin, they're just like slumped out?
I mean,
they nod. You can move around. I mean, John Travolta drives right after he takes it in Pulp Fiction. You know what I mean? Which seems like something people could do. Depending on dosage, I don't know. But even the smallest bit of cocaine will make you feel like Spider-Man.
Well, imagine, yeah, right. If you're like a five-year-old, if you have a five-year-old and they're not going to clean up their room or, you know, do the chore, do whatever, like, brush your teeth, and you give them a little Spider-Man powder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're cleaning that shit quick.
Let's say
your room, they're doing it all.
Let's say they're getting ready for Halloween, and they get the costume on, they can't find the mask, and they're crying. They're like, "What are we gonna do?" It's like, "I got you. Take a little of the Spider-Man powder, put it in their mouth. They don't need a mask. You know what I mean? They're good to go. Their spider sense is a tingling." And now it's time for one more
ad copy.
A lot of ads. Love it. ShipStation is back. The holiday rush is coming. And with more people buying online than ever before, you have to be able to ship packages out quickly, efficiently, and affordable. Luckily, ShipStation can help. With just a few clicks, you'll be managing orders, you'll be printing labels, and getting products out the door and delivered in time for holidays. Anthony had to explain what this really is to me, ShipStation, but it's because people are selling stuff on their own. Amazon, Etsy's, your own website. You've got a website yourself. Are you using ShipStation selling those t-shirts, Anthony?
It's t-shirts and sweatshirt. AnthonyJesseling.com.
Call up ShipStation. They'll bring all your orders into one simple interface, making them easy to manage from one device. They work with all the major carriers, including the Postal Service, FedEx, and UPS. You can get those big discounts that Fortune 500 companies get. They'll get it for you. You'll always know you're getting the best deal. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. Take the hassle out of holiday shopping this year. Let ShipStation help you handle it all with ease. Use our offer code VANITY to get a 60-day free trial. That's 2 months free. No hassle, stress-free holiday shipping. Visit ShipStation.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the page and type in Vanity, V-A-N-I-T-Y. That's ShipStation.com. Offer code Vanity. ShipStation. Make ship happen.
And that was...
ad copy.
It's funny. Whenever we do an ad on the show and we use the code Vanity, all I think about is the actress from Action Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
She was like smoking hot. She
I don't know who that
definitely
is.
Has a love scene with both Craig T. Nelson, who plays the bad guy in Action Jackson, and then Carl Weathers is Action Jackson. She's a love scene with him. Craig T. Nelson finds out she betrayed him, and injects her with an overdose of heroin. She was one of the most beautiful. She was like Halle Berry before, like a Halle Berry who couldn't act. You know what I mean? She was just like super hot, went by one name, was maybe in Playboy.
I was more into like the love scenes in Coach, the other Craig T. Nelson vehicle that he's really known
for. Craig T. Nelson love scene is, it's like Craig T. Nelson love scenes, Gene Hackman love scenes. What's his name? What's the guy from, Greg. I'm forgetting his name now. He's in Billions.
Bob Balaban?
No. He's been in a ton of movies. Paul Giamatti? Paul Giamatti. A Paul Giamatti love scene will blow the doors off your car and your house. Put in code vanity to see the Paul Giamatti love scene. It's amazing. And now it's time for...
Choo-choo.
Recommendation station. Greg, you want to go first? You want me to go first? Show you how it's done.
Go for it.
Okay. I'm recommending another book this week. This is a book that came out decades ago. And I recently saw it recommended by Bret Easton Ellis. And again, this was years ago. So I went and bought it. And the cover, it looks like an old-timey book. It takes place over, 60, 70 years. World War I, World War II. But it takes place on a college campus, University of Missouri. Back in the day, it's about a guy who leaves a life on a farm to get into a life of academia and gets married, and kind of how it goes wrong for him and how he has to be kind of stoic. He is the hero of the story, but things do not work out for him. And it's one of the best books I've ever read. Like, just the writing is amazing.
What is it called again?
It's called Stoner. It sounds like you're like
one
it's
of
about
the best books you've ever read.
Just strictly in terms of the writing. If I told you the story, you'd be like, yeah, but like it was, I picked it up yesterday and like in the afternoon after I finished my last book, and I finished it around 5 a.m. Like I was, wow. I did things in between, but I could not sleep until I finished it. It is it's a punch in the gut and a great book, and just a great book about life and how you should really appreciate the good, because life is mostly nothing but bad. Hmm. And that is my recommendation. The novel Stoner by John Williams.
I need to get to our JRVP off season so I can read all your recommendations, because
that's how you think I felt in our last off season. I'm like,
especially during football season, it's tough. Yeah, you know. And if I'm reading your recommendations, I don't have anything to recommend this week. I am going to recommend one. I could not recommend more highly. Another book. When we got books for you out the years. What is the What by Dave Eggers? It's one of the most incredible books I've ever read. It's a novel, but it starts out with a Sudanese refugee from written in 2006, who says, over the course of many years, I told my story out loud to Dave Eggers, and he's taken my voice and the outline of my story and written this book. So it is a novel, but it has so much energy, and it's like an epic. It's everything you want in a story. Like, it's a total page turner, and it teaches you about something you would never know about. I don't know if you remember the Lost Boys of Sudan, but it basically, tracks him as he leaves Sudan, like a lot of children, in the middle of last decade, who are basically left because of the war without any parents. He travels and follows him to Ethiopia and kind of a refugee camp in Kenya, and then eventually Atlanta. It sounds like a downer, but it's really not.
It's an amazing book. It's almost magical in a way. The writing is almost mystical, especially in the beginning when he's a child. It's a great book. I would say I think it's Dave Eggers' best book. There's a couple I haven't read of his. I never read Zytown, the one about
Zaytoun
Katrina.
Zaytoun is up Zaytoun. There for me.
I've read
those were probably
heartbreaking
my
work of staggering genius.
Those are probably
I loved
my
it at
two
time,
favorite. I like The Parade, which is his new one, which is a short sort of.
I haven't read that one, but What is the What is a fantastic book. I second Greg's recommendation, and I think honestly I don't want to rain on your parade. I may have recommended it in our JVP.
I went and looked on our little Amazon page because I had a vague memory. Was this recommended? But I could not find it. One of our fans recorded all of the things we've recommended over the years, and it's not there.
I believe you're the one. Erica, you want to?
Yeah, real quick. Mrs. Fletcher on HBO. It's Catherine Hahn. It's a limited series. It's really great. And it's not what she's normally like that silly corner, sort of slapstick humor, sort of the sexual prowess. And this is a totally, it's about her. She's a divorced single mom, and her kid, who's sort of an asshole, like goes off to college for the first time. And so she totally doesn't kind of spirals out of control. And then and it almost doesn't feel like a comedy. So from her, it was sort of a really, really, really cool role for her, and I'm really enjoying it.
I'm a big fan of the actress. I've only seen commercials. It doesn't look like a comedy at all. It looks like Euphoria. It looks like a show about sex.
Based on a book by Tom Parada, who, you know, wrote
The Leftovers,
also wrote Little Children, which is a dark movie, which I enjoyed.
Yeah. So it's really cool to see her in a role like that. I really like it.
She's a fantastic actress. Check all those things out. And now it's time for...
Whoa, Nelly Furtado, that's a spicy meatball.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.